home again at 9 o'clock. Do you need me to go? Let's see if I can. So you take down in on a big stuff so that you don't be able to left. So I am in back of that end and that is automatic. When it's a cup of the best chair, people say, I'm very good chair, but it doesn't probably be all right. We'll see if you can. Now, Krishna has just dealt with Akura, and Akura has gone home and informed Kamsa that his own, Akura's own mission to bring Krishna to Mathura was successful. And then he went to his own house. Now, Krishna is going to do something that's very wonderful. He does it twice in one sense, but this is the main time that he wanders in Mathura. And the second time he wanders in Mathura isn't really a wandering, but rather he has a particular mission, because it is the time, and that will be the next day. I would say tomorrow Krishna will go through the city of Mathura and go to the wrestling arena. And there he will meet first Kuvalayapida, the great elephant. Then he will wrestle with Chanuram, Mastika, and the others, he and Balaram. And then he will kill Kamsa. That's the second time he goes out into the city that it's described. But this first time is very special, because Krishna is a village boy. And this is the first time he's going to the big city. Now, you remember the first time you went to New York from Australia? None of you even have that experience. It's something very different. And you go and there's even big buildings there. No, I'm just teasing now. But from the village to go to the city of Mathura, everything is very completely different, because the opulence of the village is its green pastures and the cows and the bulls and the flowing rivers, and it's completely different in the big town, the big city like Mathura. So Krishna and Balaram, even though they had arrived in the afternoon, they decided to go through Mathura for a walk with all their friends, because they're boys and it's the first time they had been there, and they wanted to see something. They wanted to see what the city had to offer, and the big buildings and the paved roads and things like that. So that's what's going to happen. And this going through the city is two chapters, 41 and 42. And at the end of chapter 42, Krishna returns back to the garden outside of the city, where he and the Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd boys are staying. Now Krishna went with the cowherd boys and Nanda Maharaj stayed back. Now why did Nanda Maharaj stay? Why didn't Krishna take Nanda Maharaj with him? Well, one reason is that that Nanda Maharaj had been to Mathura many times. In the fifth chapter, for instance, he goes to Mathura to pay taxes, and there he meets Vasudeva just after Krishna's birth. But what other reason? Yes. That cough, that you obviously know the answer.
Came to the cows? No.
Well, that's not the one I was thinking of. Someone has to take care of the cows, except I don't think they had any cows with them. This is in the city of Mathura.
This one was going to fight.
Huh? Yeah. But the boys are going to enjoy the city. Well, I mean, did you take your father surfing with you when you went surfing? Because it's, I mean, that ruins everything. You can't even take your parents with you when you want to go out with the boys.
So Krishna went with the boys, even though everyone was just young. 4, 5, 6 years old. So this is what they saw, and they were amazed because Vrindavan was not like this. The Lord saw Mathura with its tall gates and household entrances made of crystal, its immense archways and main doors of gold. Mathura was incredibly opulent city. And actually there's a book that I have somewhere that written in the maybe in the 1850s or something like that, about Mathura, the history of Mathura and what kind of people lived there and what caste they were and something like that. And he describes in the history of how opulent Mathura was and how when the Muslims came they plundered the city previously. And they took away carts and carts, hundreds of carts full of gold and jewels and things like that. So it was extremely opulent. So it's tall gates and household entrances made of crystal. Imagine that. The households, the entrances were made out of crystal. Immense archways. And gates, its granaries, the doors, the main doors of the city were gold. It has granaries and other storehouses of copper and brass, and its impregnable moats, because the Yamuna was surrounding it on several sides. Beautifying the city were pleasant gardens and parks. The main intersections were fashioned of gold, and there were many mansions with private pleasure gardens, along with guild halls. Means guild halls. Guilds mean I don't know what they would be here. Guild hall. Srini. It's a sabha, different kind of the different workers, different kinds of work. That's what a guild hall would be. Different types of workers would gather in a particular type of a hall. So it was big, and there were enough of different types of workers to have different guild halls and many other buildings. Mathura resounded with the call of peacocks and pet turtle doves, who sat in the small openings of the lattice windows and on the gem-studded floors, and also on the column balconies and on the ornate rafters in front of the houses. These balconies and rafters were adorned with vaidurya stones, diamonds, crystal quartz, sapphires, coral. What color is coral?
Red.
Red. Sapphires? That's emeralds. Blue. Crystal quartz. What's that there? Clear. Shiny. Diamonds.
Yes.
Clear and shiny. Vaidurya stones. That one we don't know, maybe. Pearls and emeralds. All the royal... So how opulent was this city? And they were just walking around. And I remember years ago, I was in the country for some weeks or something like that, and then we drove into a city house with some friends, and then the city looked so amazing. It was walking around like this.
that seemed so so peculiar in one sense, but so big and opulent. So all the royal avenues and commercial streets were sprinkled with water, as were the side roads and courtyards and flower gardens. Newly grown sprouts, parched grains and rice had been scattered about everywhere. Why?
Because the bird comes to eat?
That's true, that the birds come to eat. And also chua comes, but this isn't why they put it there.
It's auspicious.
It gives a very auspicious, sattvic atmosphere, as do the, we'll hear some other of the auspicious elements, because, and this you see it when there's a fire sacrifice, a homa, by the chanting of mantras, by the incense, by the grains, by the fire itself, by the coconuts, by the banana plants, the atmosphere is very, very auspicious, and it feels rarefied and refined, very different from the atmosphere in like a lawyer's office or something like that. I know, when you ever go to a, of course none of you probably have ever been to lawyer's offices, but when you walk into a lawyer's office, immediately the atmosphere is so dead. It's terrible. And other offices are like that too. In general, offices are like that. The atmosphere is dead. But this atmosphere is rarefied, refined, because they knew how to make the atmosphere in subtle ways, or very auspicious.
So just try to, instead of just hearing the words, just imagine what it looked like. The royal avenues and commercial streets were sprinkled with water to keep the dust down, they were clean. And the side roads and courtyards and flower garlands, newly grown sprouts, parched grains and rice have been scattered about everywhere. So what a rich city, wealthy.
Gracing the houses' doorways were elaborately decorated pots filled with water, which would be decked with mango leaves, smeared with yogurt and sandalwood paste, and encircled by flower petals and ribbons. Colorful, too, beautiful, pleasing. When you walk into a place that is beautiful and auspicious, what is the effect on the consciousness? The mind becomes pacified and uplifted. And when you walk into a place that's not auspicious, that's inauspicious and decorated with the symptoms of ignorance, then the mind becomes degraded and it moves towards ignorance. So this is one of the aspects of the Vedic culture, and also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto, that things should be, and in the Bhagavad Gita, that things should be done in goodness. And we should avoid passion and reject completely ignorance. Things should be done in goodness. Things should be clean. Things should be auspicious in many ways. And then the consciousness becomes uplifted, because the purpose of the Vedic culture, the way that the culture was set up, was to uplift the consciousness and to make a better consciousness for everyone. So whatever consciousness one had, one would have better consciousness, cultivate a higher consciousness by the time his time came to leave this world. So these things are auspicious. Gracing the houses, doorways were elaborately decorated pots filled with water, which would be decked with mango leaves, smeared with yogurt and sandalwood paste, and encircled by flower petals and ribbons. Near the pots were flags, rows of lamps, bunches of flowers, and the trunks of banana and betel nut trees. So very, very, you see this in India today, auspicious countries, they always have the banana plants. And fields of bananas even is more auspicious, and they have to be a certain size and maturity. Betel nut trees, you've seen betel nut trees? They're like palm trees that are quite tall. If you go by train from Bombay to Udupi, on the side of the road, on the ocean side, there's all some, that's what they grow mostly, it seems. It's a very green area. So all very, very auspicious and opulent. Read from the purport here. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, so purport, gives this description of the elaborately decorated pots. On either side of each doorway, above the scattered rice, so on each side of the doorway, there'll be rice scattered. And then on top of the rice is a pot. And encircling each pot are flower petals. And on the neck of the pot are ribbons. And in its mouth are leaves of mango and other trees. Above each pot on a gold plate are rows of lamps. A trunk, so, and this is in Jagannath Puri's, especially during Kartik, but all the time, when it's sunset, when dusk comes, you hear, when you're just walking down the street, you hear everyone doing, you hear the aarti bells and the fragrance of incense comes, like that. And then in Kartik, in the Brahmin quarters, you see the ladies coming out just at sunset with ghee lamps, and then offering them and putting them down so that the place is just naturally lit and auspicious, and the feeling is quite wonderful that occurs by these type of procedures. A trunk of a banana tree stands on either side of each pot, and a betel nut tree trunk stands in front and also behind. Flags lean against the pots, and also it doesn't say, but the pots are always filled with water, because an empty pot is considered inauspicious, and a full pot is considered auspicious. So the boys were walking through the city. It's their first visit to the city. And then, although it was Krishna's first visit to the city, and you could say that he was a stranger to Mathura, but actually everyone had already heard of him. And everyone, the news was all around the city that Krishna had come. They had heard about Krishna, because this is also described when the wrestling match takes place. They heard about Krishna, and Krishna had done this, and Krishna had done this, and this, he killed this demon, he killed that demon, he killed Putana. When he was just 3 months old, he lifted up the great hill of Govardhan. Everyone knew about these things, and everyone knew that Krishna was so beautiful. He was unlimitedly beautiful. So when Krishna started walking through the streets, all the people started telling each other. It went on the rumor. Everyone just started telling everyone that Krishna's come, Krishna Balaram, and Krishna knew, and the people knew that Kamsa had sent for Krishna to bring him for the wrestling arena. And they also knew that actually Krishna was the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. And that actually he was suitable to be he was in the royal family, and that Kamsa had brought him for his. Everyone knew all these things. But especially, this is just like he wanted to see the beauty of this city. They were used to the beauty of the city, and they wanted to see the beauty of this boy that they had heard so much about. So, because Krishna is so attractive and his fame is so great. So, that city, Tam Sam Pravishtau, on Vasudev, now he's being called Vasudev, Nandana, the two sons, Vrital, surrounded by Yasai, by their young friends. They went on the road to see, and all the people hurriedly came out of the city to see them. They assembled, the women of Mathura, hurriedly assembled and went forth to see the two sons of Vasudeva as they entered the city on the king's road, surrounded by their cowherd boyfriends. And some of the women, my dear king, eagerly climbed to the roofs of their houses to see them. And some of the ladies, they were so eager to see Krishna. And that's going to be the point of the next several verses, the importance of, or the nature of their eagerness to see Krishna. Some of the ladies put on their clothes and ornaments backwards. Others forgot one of their earrings or ankle bells, and others applied makeup to one eye, but not the other, because they wanted to look beautiful to see Krishna, but they were so eager they forgot to do the other eye, and sometimes they would take, maybe one of them took their ankle bells, and they just grabbed it so fast, and they put it on their ears, and they were so eager to see Krishna, because they had heard about him. Later on, we will hear in the, later on anyway, in the 52nd chapter, I believe, we'll hear how Rukmini, just by hearing about Krishna, and how beautiful he was, and how powerful he was, and how he had done this, and how he had done that. Rukmini Devi, who was just a young girl, she felt completely in love with Krishna, and she was so bold, or that love had reached such a proportion, her situation was so dangerous in one sense for her, because her brother Rukmini was trying to get her married to someone who was inimical to Krishna, and she would rather die than that happen, because she had fallen in love with Krishna, that most beautiful boy. So, and that was just by hearing about Krishna. And she was so eager that she wrote Krishna a letter and said, if you don't take me and rescue me from this terrible fate, I will think of you and I'll leave this world, I'll die. I'll commit suicide, basically. And then maybe in some future birth, I'll be able to have you as my husband. So this was just by hearing that eagerness developed. And this is described also in the 8th chapter of Madhya Lila, where Ramananda Roy says, Tataraloyam apimuna nikalam Krishna bhakti rasato bhavato mati kriyatam yadikuti chalabhyate. That if the Krishna bhakti ras, that's Krishna consciousness, bhavato mati, that if you want Krishna consciousness, if you want to taste the flavor of what it is to have a relationship with Krishna, there is a price that you have to pay. Tatra loyam api mula mekalam. And this price is one's deep desire, basically. Loyam means eagerness or greed. For one has to really want it. So the residents of Mathura, they really wanted to see Krishna, and in their eagerness to see Krishna, everything else appeared insignificant. So they put, others forgot one of their earrings or ankle bells, others applied makeup to one eye, but not the others. Their eagerness had captivated them, that desire to see Krishna had made them mad, one could say. The haste and excitement, they forgot themselves. So what does it mean to forget yourself? It means you're just thinking about Krishna so intensely, or suddenly the situation of false ego is reversed. False ego makes us think about ourselves basically only and foremost. And Krishna consciousness means to think about Krishna only and foremost. So they were so much thinking about Krishna that they forgot themselves. So here are some more examples in the 26th verse. And this is, so Krishna's walking down the street and seeing the beauty and opulence of the city, and the people of the city madly positioning themselves and talking to each other that Krishna has come, and they want to see him. And those who were taking their meals abandoned them. They stopped eating. Others went out without finishing their baths or massages, because in the olden times, when people would bathe, they just didn't turn on the shower and put some water on themselves. This is described as a symptom of Kali Yuga, is that bathing means just putting water on. In previous times, people would take oil and fragrances and different things and massage their bodies, or they would use mud, and these things are considered, sometimes you see them advertised that you go to this special spa and you'll be treated like a queen, because it mostly appeals to the Matajis. And you come in there and they'll massage it. You'll get oils to put on your body and different fragrances and mud baths and things like that. So that's today, that's how a king or that's how a queen will be treated, but in previous times everyone used to bathe in that way, in a way that it makes the skin very soft. And it's very healthy. It balances the vata, actually, when you bathe with oil. Did you know that? Do you need your vata balanced? Very good. And you can bathe with oil. And what kind of oil is good for balancing vata?
Olive oil.
Yeah, it is actually good. You like olive oil? You like sesame oil? Mustard oil? Do you like the car oil? Like the oil you put in your car? What kind of oil do you like?
Ghee. I don't like oil.
You don't like oil at all? No. Well, you don't bathe with oil?
No.
Oh. How are you about to get balanced? Anyway, you can consider it. Olive oil is actually very, very good. Some consider it the preferred oil for bathing. And in Bengal, of course, they use mustard oil. And mustard oil is a bit heating, and it's recommended by Ayurveda in the winter. And then usually they use sesame oil, tiltal. So some who were eating their meals immediately abandoned. They were eating and they just dropped it, stopped everything to run to see Krishna. Others went without finishing their baths or massages. Women who were sleeping at once rose when they heard the commotion. And mothers who were breastfeeding their infants simply put their babies aside. What do you think about that, father of little baby? What do you think about that? It's a hard one, isn't it? What happened if a parent did that? What would you think? Well, that's just what the... But if someone gets captivated by Krishna, these things happen. The lotus-eyed Lord, smiling. So he's walking down the street, the royal road, and the people are
and the ladies on the roofs, and the people all looking out of the windows of the houses, and people are on the street, and there's
hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of people
just looking at Krishna as he and his cowherd boyfriends are walking down the street. So the lotus-eyed Lord smiled as he recalled his bold pastimes. All his pastimes that were bold. Why were they bold? Because Krishna does just as he likes. And he looked at all the ladies who were looking at him. And he just looked them in the eye and smiled at them. And he captivated those ladies' minds with his glances. Because Krishna's eyes dance, they move, and his eyebrows move, and very captivating. He walked with the gait of a lordly elephant in rut, creating a festival for their eyes with his transcendental body. He had a way of walking that was very deliberate and slow, and very, very noble and unhurried. So when they looked at him, just like when the city of Mathura was so beautiful, and it was the way it's described, it's like there was a festival going on, the way it was decorated. And there was actually a festival coming up. But Krishna is Bhusana Bhusanangam. He is the ornament of all ornaments. His transcendental body is so beautiful. It itself is a festival. And it is a source of pleasure for the divine goddess of fortune, his body. For Sri Ramana Atmana Utsava. It is a source of festival. He's so attractive and so beautiful. It's a source of pleasure. Source of pleasure for the goddess of fortune. Because, what's the interesting thing about the way that Sukadeva is describing it? A source of pleasure for the goddess of fortune. It's a festival even for her. And she is the one who possesses all fortune. So having all fortune in her possession, what is she going to do for a festival? She already has this all fortune, but she finds the transcendental bodily form of Krishna the most beautiful, and she becomes completely captivated, and fortune, good fortune herself, is very happy to serve the lotus feet of Krishna. Some more on how the ladies of Mathura reacted. The ladies of Mathura had repeatedly heard about Krishna. And as soon as they saw him, their hearts melted. In other words, they were filled with love. They felt honored that he was sprinkling upon them the nectar of his glances and his broad smiles. Why was he smiling? Anyone remember? What was he recalling?
His bold pastimes.
He had killed this one, he had killed... He was just thinking about what he had done in Vrindavan. So he's thinking...